I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm thrilled to be here once again. Beautiful, beautiful days we have together. So listen, some interesting things I want to talk about. We have impeachment stuff boiling all around, whether it's going to happen or not happen. We have some of the big wigs, they would call them, in the Democrat Party, arguing with some of their newer members on whether or not there should be an impeachment. They don't really understand how that's going to go. We're going to talk about that. There's some cold cases out there that have been solved recently, some high-profile cold cases, and they've been done using DNA. Now, we've discussed this once before, but I think I see this happening more and more. And I think that this one company has now been used 85 times to solve murders, not by the actual person who did the killing, but by connecting the DNA at the crime scene to family members and then locating their suspect thereafter. Very interesting law enforcement developments here with technology. Recently, my wife Kathleen and I, with some friends, had traveled to Europe. We went over to the United Kingdom, we were in Scotland, and we were in Ireland. And we had an opportunity to see some different points of view on law enforcement, on community, how people handle problems, what they got going on for them as far as healthcare, their pensions, the EU, and how people view that. We were over there at the time of the elections, and it was really kind of crazy. A lot of insight. We also saw some things that you don't see here in America, because while we were in Scotland, we were watching a lot of television. You know, I'm a news junkie, so I'm watching the news over there. It's very interesting to see a different point of view. And there were stories that were there about the UK and their healthcare system that we really do not hear over here in America. I think most of it is kept from us because it wouldn't really fit the narrative of universal healthcare that many people are pushing really hard. So we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about the difference between expectations and outcomes, and the two different types of view of things from the American view. I was very clear when I came back from this trip that what I had to explain to people about America, you know, because they have a lot of strange thoughts because the media over there is just as bad, if not worse, than our media. And they are so filled with inappropriate ideas about America and how we function that I'm going to tell you all those stories in a couple of minutes. It's actually pretty good. All right, so this is where we're going to begin. Let's take a look at the impeachment, the slow boil of impeachment that's going on right now. We see Nancy Pelosi and Schiff, they're talking about backing off, you know, for now. They're going to back off impeachment for now. Because the reality is, a poll just came out and it showed President Trump at about 48% approval rating. Now, my hypothesis here, to use such a word, would be that just like in the last election, after they beat him up so bad and made him out to be such a retrobate, that lots of people that were in support of Donald Trump would not say so publicly for a lot of reasons. Number one, if you wear a Make America Great hat, somebody could snatch it off your head. Somebody could punch you in the face. Somebody could otherwise harass you. We see this happen all the time. You get thrown out of a restaurant. You can lose your job for being a Trump supporter. It's unbelievable what we got going on here. And when I spoke to people in Europe, some of the things they were asking and some of the things we were talking about made me realize how great of a country we really have and how dangerous it would be to the world if we lost it. So this impeachment, the reason that they're not going to proceed with it right now is because they say there's no GOP support, no Republican support in the House and in the Senate that would make it successful. Now, I think they've known that forever. And I think the idea really is that they just want to cast impeachment against President Trump, obviously to say he's an impeached president, because that would make them be able to stand up and say, hey, we told you he was wrong, we told you he was bad, he's even been impeached. All right? Now, that means nothing unless he's convicted. But he would be one of very few presidents that has ever been actually impeached. So they would like to throw that at him. The problem is they know, I think, in the top leadership, not these new young people that are running around the party, these socialist people, these AOCs and all them, they don't quite understand the kickback that they're going to get from people. Because I think like in the last election, there were so many people who were supporting Trump that wouldn't come out and say so. For fear of all the things I said. They didn't want, you know, you don't put a Trump bumper sticker on your car because some idiot will cut your tires, throw some feces on your car, smash your window, do something ridiculous. So people do not put those things on the cars. That's obvious. I know that's why I don't do it. I don't want somebody to damage my car. Right? So when we see that his approval rating is at 48%, they know there's no public support. And they know that 48 is probably in the mid 50s of support. People just won't come out and say they support him, but they're going to run in and they're going to push that button. So it's interesting to see how they're dancing around. Now, the young people, these younger members, these socialist members of the Democrat Party, they just are so fixated on impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. That's all they want to talk about because they're insisting on, they think they're going to get rid of him. They think getting impeached is going to force him out. So if you pay attention, everything they're doing is really to drive those poll numbers down so that if he's down in the 30s, at that point, you will see the Republicans step away from him because we know most of them do not have any backbone. There are some that are pretty good, but most of them have no backbone. And if the opportunity comes up where they feel, oh, I have to step away, they will step away and they will let him founder and be impeached. They would vote for it. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't see them as courageous, powerful fighters. Have they done it yet? At this point, every time we see Pelosi or Schumer or one of these Democrats come forward and say horrible things about the president or this Nadler going on and on about, we know he colluded, we know. Do you ever see a Republican press conference where there's 9 or 10 prominent Republicans standing there saying, this is nonsense, this is a lie? No, they don't do it. So I don't expect them to do it. That's the reality. So that's interesting to see how that's progressing. Now, I think you will see a kickback against them if they go after him. I think Pelosi might know that. That being said, doesn't mean they won't do it anyway. If they see an opportunity, they might. Because like I said, I think they want to be able to just say, he's an impeached president. See, we told you. Pelosi did say something interesting, though, the other day. You know, in one of the news reports that came out, she said, we really can't impeach him if he wouldn't be convicted in the Senate. And because the Senate's controlled by Republicans, you would think most of them would have enough guts to vote for their president and not convict him. And I think that's probably the riding sentiment now is that, well, if we're all going to stick together and not convict him, then we won't. But I think what you're seeing is that Nancy Pelosi says if he was not convicted in the Senate, then he would be able to say, hey, no conviction, not guilty. And that would put all of this to bed. And they really don't want it to go to bed. They want this to last into the election. And that's where they're going to try and, you know, right now I'm sure they're out there trying to find anything, any more lies, any more people that will come forward and say he did things, secret tapes that suddenly appear, whatever. You know, the dirty tricks. It's a shame for our country, though, that they're busy looking for dirty tricks to try and fool the stupid among us instead of coming up with a better healthcare plan, a better tax situation, a better government funding to take care of the illegal alien problem we have and protect our borders and help those people who are here already. Wouldn't it be better to hear about those kind of policies? Well, I think it would, but I think we all know the reality is when every election comes around and they say, let's not have mudslinging. People like mudslinging. Mudslinging is effective. And I don't want to call our fellow citizens stupid, but if you can watch some mudslinging advertisements and go, well, I guess that other person's really bad and believe that without investigating it yourself, without realizing how many lies are being told to you, then that's kind of a problem for our country that we have everybody voting and they're not really up to speed. All right, so I would think people should get themselves educated. But try and have an argument with somebody. Strike that. Try and have a conversation with somebody where you have different points of view. It's almost impossible because people are so locked into their points of view, so locked into their positions, they don't want to hear any other facts. See, because any other facts are just lies. You're just making things up. Even if you can point out where the fact comes from, what the fact is, they still don't want to hear it. That's pretty much of a big problem, too. You know, I pay attention to lots of different people, and I listen to both sides of an argument. You know, I may not agree with any of these people, but I listen to the arguments to see if there's any validity to it. Is there anything that Adam Schiff is saying that might be worth listening to? I listen to it, and then I evaluate it, and then I put it in its right place. Same thing with Pelosi, all of them. I listen to what they're saying. I don't walk in lockstep, and none of us should do that. But unfortunately, many of our fellow citizens do just that. So it's kind of hard to have that argument. All right, so to take a look at this impeachment, it was weird being in a European country and talking to the local people about America. It did a couple of things for me. It helped me to solidify some of my feelings. Because when you're here in America, when you're arguing and talking to people, from no matter which side, which party you're talking to, you're really all talking to Americans. We're all kind of aware of what's going on. We know what the lies are. We know what the nonsense is. We know what the truth is. But when I was over in the United Kingdom, and I was talking to people there, like I said, their press is probably worse than ours because they are so far to the left because they're all socialist leaning to begin with, that the things that they think about America are just shocking. So it was interesting. We have a cousin who lives in Ireland, and she was a hospital worker. She worked her entire career, and it is now time for her retirement. Now, they will tell you, when I talk to people over there, that the great thing about their high tax system, high regulation system, is that you get so many benefits. You know, the healthcare is wonderful, right? Isn't that what we're told here in America? The NHS, National Health System in the UK, is the best in the world, right? This is fantastic. Everyone should have it. Well, when you actually talk to people who are there experiencing it, it's a little different. So our cousin, who's ready to retire, has been promised her entire life that she's going to pay these high taxes. She's going to pay all of these fees. She's going to deal with all this regulation. But at the end, she's going to get this great health care for free. Well, she just retired a couple of weeks ago. And guess what? They don't have free health care anymore because there's too many people on the system now. So now the free health care she paid into her whole life is now she has to pay for her health care, even though it was free and they took all those high taxes. They're not giving her back any of those high taxes. She gets none of that stuff back. But now she has to pay. So it's in a position of she thought she was going to retire and be comfortable, and now she's got to worry about paying that health care. Now, I will grant you, they do have some cheaper electric over there. They do have a couple of things that are done a little bit differently. But for the most part, we're being told a lot of nonsense about their healthcare system. So this is one of the things I found interesting. We're in Scotland, and I'm watching a lot of the news, and I'm watching the TV shows. And on comes, it looks like a 2020. Like we have 2020 here, the TV show, the news investigative show. They have something like that over there also. And the topic, surprisingly enough, that actually made me and my friends sit there and stare at the TV and go, wow, I can't believe they're doing that. The topic was the crisis in the NHS. And as you listen to this story, they're talking about how the NHS system is failing. It's running out of money. The healthcare is poor. The people are not happy with it. They don't get the healthcare they need. There are lines. You know, when I was talking to some people over there and we were having this discussion, they said, yeah, at least it's for free. In America, you got to pay for everything. I said, well, you know, I'm 57. If I needed a knee operation in America, I would go to my doctor and I would get my knee operation, probably within 2 weeks. You know, they could schedule me, get me right in there. If I needed it tomorrow, I could probably get it tomorrow. So I said, what about you over here? And, you know, they kind of look at you and they go, well, it would all depend if you really needed it or not. I said, what do you mean if you really needed it? Well, you know, there's a lot of things you got to take into account. Are you still working full time? You know, how old are you? You know, is it worth spending that money on you getting a new knee? Or is there some other accommodation they can make for you before they would decide to do that? I said, yeah, but what if I decided I wanted a new knee? I was tired of the pain in my knee and I wanted to be able to walk around comfortably. And they said, well, yeah, you could probably get it. You just have to go through the boards and you have to talk to people and convince them. And I said, convince who? Convince somebody else that my knee hurts and I want to get it fixed? That seems ridiculous to me. So this whole story on this TV show was how the NHS system that we're told here in America is the model, the standard by which we should all have. We should pay high taxes and regulation because we get this tremendous healthcare like they get over in England. Not so much. You know, this whole pay into this, pay into this, you get this free healthcare. Not so much. They're starting to now charge people for it. So I found that extremely interesting over there. As we're walking around, I'm looking at, coming from a law enforcement background here on Chasing Justice, I'm looking to see what goes on with law enforcement over there. You know, now it's they have interesting things. We have bollards and stuff set up around our important buildings. We have, police officers that carry weapons here in America. We have, when you go to a big event in New York City now, you'll see the Thanksgiving Day parade. They put the garbage trucks and sand trucks blocking the side streets. All of these are stark reminders of the world we live in, where there are people, lone wolf terrorists or associated terrorists, who will get in a truck, go into a parade route, and will mow down as many people as they can with a truck. So our response is, here we have police officers everywhere. We have armed police officers. We have these giant trucks blocking side roads to keep people out. There's bollards at our buildings. Over there, I found that there are bollards in lots of different places, closing roadway things that can close right away, very quickly, all over major areas where people walk, tourist areas, and it's very quiet. You know, nobody talks about it, but when you know what you're looking for, you realize there's a bollard everywhere now to keep these trucks from running off the road and killing people on the side of the sidewalks at these tourist places. Very interesting. When it came to the law enforcement, I was surprised at how few police officers I actually saw. So a lot of ambulances running around, but very, very few police officers. So in Ireland, they're called the Garda or the Guard. Okay, and they're unarmed. While we were in Dublin, we saw some police officers responding to a call. I think it was a domestic at one of the apartments that we were walking past. And the police car rolls up, and these three young officers get out, three of them in one car. And they go running up to the door, and they're talking to the people at the house. And it was just interesting that none of them were armed. And it was just a different picture than we have here in America. You kind of felt left alone. I actually saw a van load of police officers, and I met Officer Kenny. And I'll see if I can get a picture of him up on the website. He was a really nice guy in Edinburgh. And while I was talking with him, I said, you guys don't carry guns. And he said to me, so you're American law enforcement. What's that like to carry guns around with you everywhere? I said, well, it becomes second nature. It's a tool, like a whistle or a flashlight or whatever. A gun just becomes a tool. The difference is, if I have to confront a bad guy or a bad girl with a weapon, be it a knife, a cleaver, an axe, or another gun, I can fight back. I don't have to call an armed unit from God knows where they are to come and respond. I can protect myself and other people immediately. And he looks at me and he goes, wow, that would be really great, because we come across some bad people out here. You know, a lot of people with knives, which I thought was interesting too. Knives. Well, wait a minute. If you take away everybody's guns, there'll be no violence. Isn't that what they tell us here? But over there, they got a lot of knives running around. So this is where I want to get started today, here in segment one of Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Thanks for being with me. We'll be back. I got a lot more. See you in a minute.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right. Come on back in here at Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Hey, listen, I want to tell everybody out there, go to my website, www.truesecuritydesign.com. We are very, very excited to say that we are now starting to move into the Southeast and the Southwest part of the United States of America. We have our presence here in the Northeast, and we're moving out towards the Wisconsin area. We have some contacts out there, upstate New York, We're moving into Massachusetts, and now within the next year, we're going to have bases located down in Texas, San Antonio area specifically, but we'll be able to service Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, and the Southwest. We're moving out towards that location. We have connections in Colorado, so we're all over the place. True Security Design is now truly a national company to help you with safety and security. So that includes threat assessments of your facilities, whether that's a school or your business. We come out and we look at the safety and security. We look at what's good and what's bad. We give you a very detailed report with a roadmap to fix the things that we found that were wrong so that they're within constraints of time and budgets. Not everybody has money to just go out and spend. So we try and give you a roadmap of how to go ahead and how to fix the things that are problematic about your location or your school or whatever to make it safer. We also provide a lot of training. We provide training to school teachers, to students, to business people, to just about anyone else that's out in the public where we could find ourselves in a position of danger. So I don't like connecting what I do to events of the day. Unfortunately, events of the day that we see with active shooters and violent attacks on people is what my business is based around. It's helping you and your family stay safe during these horrific type of events. You know, recently we saw in Virginia Beach, we saw this attack at a workplace. Workplace violence, you know, it was a guy who worked in the municipal hall. He shows up, apparently he put in his resignation that day, comes back later in the day, and he kills 12 people. You know, this is horrific. You know, I don't know their level of preparation there. I don't know what security information they had in place. I don't know what kind of screening they did about their personnel, all right? But this is what True Security Design does. We go out, we look at all of these things. We can help you identify potentially dangerous people. We have different ways that we categorize potential danger to help you plan for it. So go take a look, www.truesecuritydesign.com. All right, you can always reach out to me at jpangaro@americaoutloud.com also. If you have any questions, I don't mind talking to people about safety and security. You don't always have to pay me. All right. Keeping people safe is what I do now. All right. So back to chasing justice here in America Out Loud. One of the things I think what I was struck by in dealing with people in Europe, and this was all different people. We met people from lots of different parts of Europe, and they were very surprised about the speed at which me and everybody in my group moved. You know, we got up in the morning, we went down, we want a cup of coffee. I don't want a cup of coffee. That's how I start my day. Sometimes I have two. I'm a cop. Sometimes I have three. But you go into just about any store that sells coffee, and you go in and say, I'd like a cup of coffee. Now they say, do you want espresso? Latte? No, I want coffee. I want a cup of black coffee. Just black coffee in a cup so I can drink it. Oh, you want Americano? Yeah, give me Americano. American, right? Sounds American. Give me American cup of coffee. A black cup of coffee. Well, what they do is they make the cups of coffee individually. Of all the places we went, all the bars, the pubs, the restaurants, every place we went, I found one place that actually made an entire pot of coffee where you had like, you know, 12 cups in a carafe sitting on a hot plate so they could pour the coffee. And that was in a restaurant that really catered to American patrons. Every place else we went, the Starbucks, the Bee Gees Coffee, every single place we went into, you ask for a cup of coffee, they make it individually, and they make it like espresso. So they have a cup of hot water, a clean hot water. Then they make a cup of espresso, and then they pour the espresso into the hot water and mix it up, and they call that an Americano. So when four of us would go into the store in the morning and say, I need four cups of coffee, you know how long that took? We were there 10, 15 minutes waiting for coffee. I just want a cup of coffee. You know, you walk in around here, you walk into the convenience store, there's a pot, you pour the cup, you pay the cup, you're out the door in a minute. So it was interesting. People are saying, boy, you Americans are in such a hurry. You're in such a hurry. You're always running around. You're going fast. You're looking at Well, yeah. And that made me stop and think, are we really going fast? Or is everyone else going slow? You see? Now, I said earlier that I like to look at both sides of an argument and try and figure it out. Are we doing things wrong moving this fast? Or are they doing things wrong moving that slow? And that was symptomatic of everything. You know, you went into a restaurant And here in America, when you get seated, four people get seated for dinner, whether you wait online or they have an open table, they sit you down, and that person that sits you down usually says, would you like something to drink? And you name your cocktails. I'd like four cocktails, a cup of soda, whatever it is you want, a cup of coffee. And within 2 to 3 minutes, somebody's coming to your table with your drinks. They introduce you to your waiter or your waitress. And then you start to get, you know, appetizers. You ask your questions. But those drinks come immediately. I found over in Europe, we would be seated at a table. Come on over here. Sit down. Very nice. Somebody will be with you in a minute. And we'd be waiting 10 minutes, 11 minutes. Somebody would finally show up. Hi, how are you? Good, good. Could we get some cocktails? Sure. What would you like? We'd give the order. And then they'd come back another 10 minutes later. Here's your drinks. You want to order your food? It was very, very slow. Now, I suppose people could say it would be relaxing. I found it frustrating. And so did our entire group. So the thought that I got from most people was that their way of life is good enough. What they're doing is good enough. They don't have the money in general like we have in America. And I don't mean everybody in America has a lot of money, but in general, you know what I'm talking about. You go out to the restaurant, you buy your food, you move at your speed. It's just what I equate it to is the American drive that has led our country to become the greatest country on the planet. The leader in just about everything is because of the way Americans push. We're entrepreneurs. I kept walking around going, if I just had a carafe of coffee and a pot, I could set up on a corner and I could sell a million cups of coffee in 2 minutes. See, so I started immediately thinking like an entrepreneur. People don't want to sit around and wait for this, you know, for this latte that they're making over here, taking 10 minutes. I just want a cup of coffee. I think a lot of people would have paid me to give them a cup of coffee right then and there. I know all the American people would have. So I found that interesting. When we talked to other people about the healthcare and the high costs of their healthcare and the taxes that they pay, and they would say, I'd say, well, you know, don't you want a bigger house? Don't you want to do more? Don't you want to get more? You know, and they would say, well, as long as we got healthcare and we got food, it's good enough. Now, that wasn't everybody, but that was the majority of the feeling I got from most of the people. We our group was astounded by that kind of a thought pattern, because now, granted, Joe Pangaro and the group of people I hang out with were all highly motivated. Everybody's entrepreneurs. We're all pushing hard. You know, we're trying to make our careers go really well. I get that. But in general, everybody over there was pretty much, it's good enough if it's good enough. You know, why push so hard? Okay. So I found that an interesting contrast between America and Europe, at least the Europe that I saw. Now, a friend of mine was with me. He said, Italy's the same way. Germany was kind of the same way. They were a little faster, but not much. But that's kind of the way it is in Europe. And I had to absolutely contrast that with how America leads the world in everything. And the reason we lead the world is because we go a little bit faster. We try a little bit harder. And you know what? It's not good enough. If something's not great, we strive for greatness. That's what America does. We strive for greatness. So I found that very, very interesting. And I really enjoyed seeing that. Now, I told you they had the TV show about the NHS in crisis. You will never hear about that over here, all right? Especially not the way this show portrayed it. Man, there's a big problem. If you're elderly, you know, you see how much care people get here when they're older. Over there, it was frightening watching that show. If I can think of the name of it, I will give it to you in another episode, and you can go look it up. I'm sure it's on the internet. But the crisis in the NHS. The other thing that we heard about, specifically to the UK and to London, we hear about all these terrorist incidents, right? All these knife attacks that are going on. And there are. The people are scared to death over there of knife attacks. That's what they're worried about because, you know, nobody has guns. So all of these people here in America who give you the BS that if you just take away the guns, the world would be so safe. Not so much. It's about people hurting other people, and they'll use whatever weapons they have at hand. So there's really a lot of knife attacks going on in Europe and in the UK. Matter of fact, one of the largest groups of immigrants to the London area, to the United Kingdom, are people that are coming from East Africa, right? So there's lots and lots of people there from East Africa. Well, there was a story on the news, and you'll never hear this on American news, there was a story on the news over there how large groups of East African immigrants are sending their children back to East Africa because of the number of knife attacks and murders that are taking place in London and other parts of the United Kingdom. We were shocked to hear that story. Because over here in America, you never hear about anything bad going on over there. Oh, it's all wonderful. The immigration is fantastic. Everything is great. But when you're there, there's parents that immigrated to the United Kingdom, but because there are so many knife attacks, the young people getting killed and stabbed and injured, that they're sending their children back to East Africa where it's safer. Think about that. We don't hear about that here in America, but that's what's going on over there. The other thing, you know, we hear a little bit about, you know, the rape crisis that's going on in some of these areas where you have so many different immigrants coming in. Now, I know Trump said that there was sexual assaults by immigrants and people lost their mind that he was saying every Mexican that comes here is a rapist. We all know that's not true. We all know that's not true. And you know what? That's not what he was saying. And I don't want to rehash that argument. But the bottom line is, in parts of the world, the idea of sexual assault is not the same as it is for people here in the West. You know, it's used as a weapon. It's used more commonly. I can't even think of the right words to say what it is. But there's an epidemic, a crisis, the rape crisis they're talking about in the United Kingdom. You know, that's not me making that up. It's not me because I hate people. I'm coming up with this. I don't even know the immigrant groups they're talking about. There's so many different immigrant groups in Europe right now. But this was a show that was on in the newspapers. The rape crisis is getting out of control in London, and they don't know how they're going to deal with it. So they're telling women when they go out, never, ever go alone. Always go with someone else. Watch where you're going. Keep yourself out of certain places. Could you imagine if you said that here in America? Hey, listen, it's dangerous over there. Don't go there. People would lose their minds. Over there, they're telling you, hey, you're going to get hurt. This is going to happen. You shouldn't do it. So that, to me, was another one of the contrasts in how things are portrayed on American media and how things are in the real world in parts of, in some of these countries where they want you to think everything they have is great and America is bad. It's another lie. I saw it in my own, with my own two eyes. I heard it with my own two ears on the news. People were talking about it over there. They're kind of like, yeah, we're concerned about it. You know, we're worried about knife attacks. Amazing, knife attacks. Over here, it's all gun attacks. And that's the end of the world. Get rid of the guns, you'll be safe. You won't be safe from dangerous people. We have to learn to identify dangerous people, and we have to deal with them appropriately. It's a story for another day. All right? Sending them back. The pensions. That's another thing. You know, when we ask people over there, and again, I don't want to dwell on the European side of this. It's really to pose a contrast to the American side. Now, when they talk about their pensions, and we talked about our relative who was waiting for her pension, her whole life she put into this. She was going to get this government pension. It was going to be free health care. All this stuff is going to be great. Now she's retiring and she's finding out that, not so much. We had to change the rules. You're not going to get what you were promised. You're not going to get anywhere near what you're promised. You're going to pay for things you were told you were going to get for free, but you don't get any of that money back. All right? That's kind of difficult to deal with, especially when that's all you've had to plan on your whole life. So where are we going to go from there? All right. I want to talk about the law enforcement situation. Now, I started to mention the law enforcement situation. We were in very rural Ireland, Western Ireland, in Donegal. Dunlow is the town, Burtonport, all these different areas. My father-in-law is from that area. My mother-in-law, their families are from that area. So we've heard about it our whole lives here, and we decided we had to go see it. Well, I was amazed at the beauty of Western Ireland, how gorgeous it is. Hardly any trees. All the mountains that are there are giant granite and volcanic mountains with grass and hardly any trees. But these vistas that you can see for miles and miles and miles. The ocean is as blue as can be. Some parts of we went to the beaches, and the beaches had the water the same color as the Caribbean. You know, that green, blue water in the Caribbean? Same water they had there, only it was like a 47 degrees. It was freezing. Absolutely amazing. But as I looked around, one thing I noticed as we were driving from little town to little town, and they look like they do on the postcards. It's really amazing. It looks like old Europe. It's really, really very cool for me, who had never actually been there until recently. But I noticed that we went into all these different pubs. We saw all these different businesses. We saw no police officers. Like, there was no cops walking a beat. There was no cop cars riding around. We went past one building. It was the Garda building, you know, in Ireland. That's their police, the Garda or the Guard, whatever they call them. And there was a police car parked there, but the business, the door was locked. There was nobody there. So I started to ask the people there. I said, listen, where's all your police? And they're like, well, we really don't have a lot of police around. You know, if you need them, you call on the phone, and depending on the emergency, you know, that's how quick it'll take them to get here. But pretty much we don't have police running around. I said, well, what if you have crime? And it was amazing. They, almost to a person, they said, well, we really don't have a lot of crime. So what about burglaries? I said, well, I guess, but, you know, if you commit a crime around here, you're committing it against people that know you. And the embarrassment to your family would be so horrible. There really is no crime. We really don't have a lot of crimes for the need for police, which I found to be so different than over here in America. Like, because there was no crime, there was no feeling on the street that you were going to get attacked or somebody was going to come and take your stuff or you had to lock your doors. This was the whole part of the country. Really an interesting thing to see. I said, so if you need the cops, what do? They said, well, you can call and they'll tell you when they'll be around. I said, how often do they come around? Oh, usually once a month or so. You know, they'll send some police cars out. They send a couple of lads out to take a run around and see what's going on. You never know when they're going to show up, but all of a sudden there'll be a cop car riding around or a Garda car, which I found just so different than here in America. So we have a different sense of being. We have a different way of going about things. We have a different speed of going about things. And I think those are some of the essential elements that make America the leader in the world, because we have this urgency to life. It's unfortunate we also have a lot more crime, but we also have a lot more going on. We have a lot more human elements going on in our country than they do in Ireland or in the United Kingdom. Well, the United Kingdom has a lot more going on, and now they're having a lot more problems. But in Western Ireland, it was absolutely gorgeous to see. The history is amazing. The people are wonderful. It's everything that my father-in-law told me all these years it was, and I would go back there in a heartbeat. But again, I'm like an entrepreneur. I'm looking around going, wow, there's nothing here. Maybe we could set up a coffee store here and sell a lot of coffee to people. So we'll be back in a minute with round three as I ruminate on the differences between America and the rest of the world. And there's still more to talk about. We'll see you in a minute here on Chasing Justice.
I'm going to ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
All right, welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, I want to thank all of you for listening. And I got to tell you, the Twitter account, at Pangaro Global, just keeps growing and growing and growing. And I can't thank all of you enough for the nice comments and the emails that you send in to everybody. It's just really been heartwarming to realize that the voice can get out there, that people are hearing it. So don't ever hesitate to send me your questions, topics, anything you want to talk about to jpangaro@americaoutloud.com and join us on Twitter at Pangaro Global. Let me hear what's going on. Now, I got to say, I did see some interesting stuff. You know, here on America Out Loud, this is a firebrand for free speech. You know, you look at some of the programs that Malcolm Out Loud puts out there. The topics, the people he has on, and people don't hold back. Matter of fact, you know, before you go on one of these shows, the first thing he tells you is, listen, don't hold back. Say how you feel. Come up with your opinions. Don't be afraid to argue with people, which I think is amazing. It's awesome. But when you consider that power of free speech, we often take that for granted, and it is such a wonderful thing here on America Out Loud. So listen to the other shows. Go see what's going on out there. Enjoy yourself on this station. There's something 24/7 for everybody. Weekend shows, weekday shows, nighttime shows. Make sure you dial it in. Get the podcast of all the different shows, especially Chasing Justice, of course, because I want to hear from everybody out there. All right, so I want to finish up my riff here on our European engagement, so to speak, for the Chasing Justice crew and things we saw over there. We were in Scotland, and I told you we met a couple who were there with their son who had just run the marathon in Edinburgh. And it was not a lot of us in this bar. It was a small bar near the hotel where we were staying. And that's one of the things we were looking for. We were looking for out-of-the-way places where real local people were. We don't like touristy stuff. We want to go where the real people are. We want to eat the real food. You know, of course, you got to see some of the touristy things, but we like to get off the beaten path. So we got into this little pub. It was totally cool. I think it was built in 1739. It's been occupied ever since, and just really cool decor, and we're having a good time. But one of the things I noticed, you go to America, and you say, hey, give me a shot of brandy, or a shot of whiskey, or a shot of whatever, and the bartender will pour you basically a shot glass and a half. That's the standard American kind of a drink. 1.5 shots. How many milliliters that turns out to be, I don't know. But I know that based on the way things are, you know, you tip that bartender and your next drink will be 2 shots. You know, that's just kind of how we do things. You come in, you get a better drink. Well, over there, we noticed that whether you were getting a glass of wine or whether you were getting a gin and tonic, or whether you were getting some very famous Scotch or Irish whiskey, all the bartenders would use these little round cylindrical metal devices with numbers on them that told you how many milliliters you were putting into that drink. And they were very precise. You know, they put in exactly that much into your drink. They put that much into your wine glass. The wine glasses had numbers etched into the sides of them to tell you how many milliliters, because you could pay for a double. You could pay for the single, or you could pay for the giant, and it was the different amounts. So I got to talking to one of the bartenders, and I said, listen, you know, could you make the drink a little stronger? I mean, it's kind of weak. Matter of fact, while we were sitting there, there was a couple who were drinking gin and tonics, and they had, I don't know, I guess they were half their drink, and the guy walks over to the bartender and he goes, excuse me, there's a problem with these drinks. And the bartender says, what? And the guy says, well, there's no gin in them. And the bartender says, oh, I assure you, the proper amount of gin is in there. And he says, yeah, but I really can't taste it. It tastes like all tonic water. So the bartender says, well, if you're not happy with them, I'll remake them for you. So she takes them, dumps them out. And I'm standing next to the guy. I said, you sound like you're American. Where are you from? He goes, I'm from Texas. He goes, I want to taste the gin and tonic. There's no gin in there. I said, watch this. Watch how they make it. And she uses this little cylindrical device, and she puts the gin in the glass. So she made her drink, and I said to her, so if I give you an extra $10, can we get drinks that are, like, you know, flavorful with the alcohol we're looking to get in our drink? She says, oh, no, I can't do it. You can buy a double, though. I said, well, of course I could buy a double, and then I would pay twice as much. I'm talking about throwing you a good tip to make me a good drink. And she says, can't do it, because the bottles are, you know, the bottles have shot numbers. So every time you take a shot, it develops a new number, like 22 shots, 23 shots, to tell you how many shots have come out of the bottle. I said, yeah. She goes, well, ever since we had the EU regulations, this is what we have to do. The bottles are all counted. Somebody comes in once in a while and they compare the number of shots, the bottles downstairs, to the inventory we have. And there's a problem if you're over-serving, if you're putting too much alcohol in, you got to do just the right amount. So that's why we use these devices. And they use them everywhere. So I had always envisioned, you know, you go in Ireland and Scotland, you're going to get some Scottish or Irish whiskey, right? You're going to get a glass of whiskey and you're going to drink your whiskey and listen to the music. It was tiny little shots of whiskey is what you got in your glass. So totally different than here in America, where that entrepreneur spirit, hey, listen, I know what you're supposed to get, a shot and a half in your glass, but you throw the guy or the girl a couple of bucks, and they make you some really good drinks, right? It's just the difference. It's another difference in how things go over there. But it was funny that the guy from Texas noticed it. He went up to the counter and said, there's no gin in my gin and tonic. Could you please put some in there? So I found that to be a pretty big difference in the way we do those kind of things here in America. Now, the couple whose son ran in the marathon, they were in their early 60s, I'm going to guess. They seemed very nice. The son seemed a little intoxicated. I don't think this was the first pub he hit after he ran, but he ran a marathon. So I think he was drained, you know, of his energy, and he had a couple of pints. He had a couple of pints over there, and the kid was a little intoxicated, but a very friendly young man. And he's talking to people in our group, and we're talking to the bartender, and wait till I tell you about the bartender. And the woman says to me, so are you on holiday? And I said, oh, actually, yeah, we are. We're from America, you know, from New Jersey, of all places, and we're here enjoying Scotland. And she says, oh, we're for Inverness, which is northern Scotland, which is up near the Highlands, you know, the Highland area of Scotland. She goes, yeah, we're down here for my son's marathon. And she leans over. Now, there's really nobody in the bar but my group, which is four of us, their family, which is three of them, the bartender, and two other people sitting at a table pretty far away. Now, the bar's not big, but this is kind of the scene. And she leans into me and she goes, can I ask you a question? And I said, sure. She goes, what do you think about Donald Trump? I know over there, they don't care for Donald Trump. They don't care for him really at all over there. I didn't met hardly anybody that was a pro-Trump supporter, which I thought was really interesting. But like they have candies, insultments they call them, with Donald Trump's picture on them. They got all these absurd caricature pictures of Donald Trump saying all kinds of weird things. And they sell them as gifts and stuff. People are buying them left and right. But I looked at this woman, but there's the way she leaned in quietly and said to me, what do you think of Donald Trump? I said, well, actually, I like him. I think he's a pretty good president. You know, he says some things sometimes that wouldn't be the way I would say it. But he seems to be out front, and the economy's doing great. He's turned the economy around. The country, I think, is in better spirits than it's been in a long time. I think he's a strong leader. I like him. And she goes, so do we, my husband and I. And she calls her husband over. He goes, they like Donald Trump. They like Donald Trump. I said, yeah. She goes, well, all we hear over here is how bad he is and how he's a bad man and he's a horrible person and he does bad things to people. I said, yeah, that's what our news media kind of pumps out. I said, where do you listen to? She goes, CNN. I said, well, that's part of your problem right there. You should listen to other sources. She says, now this is the interesting thing. She says, you know, every American that we meet, and we're all over Scotland, we've been in a couple of different countries recently. Every American we meet everywhere, we ask the same question, because we like Donald Trump. We think if the American economy does well, the world is going to do well. And if America is strong, then that's going to keep everybody safe. And I said, you know, you're absolutely right. That's a great point of view she has. But she says, every American we meet does exactly what you did. When I ask them if they like Donald Trump, they kind of look around to see who's listening, and then they say, we like him. She goes, every single one. Now, that's anecdotal evidence, but I find it really interesting, don't you, that this woman who lives over there likes Donald Trump and asks every American she meets, and the overwhelming amount of people that she's meeting that are American are saying they like Donald Trump. Now, that doesn't kind of fit with our news media's portrayal of the president as someone who's hated, reviled, etc. So I thought that was interesting, and you should know about that. Now, the other thing that went on in that bar I thought was interesting. Young lady behind the bar, attractive young girl. I'm going to say she's, what did she tell me she was? 29 years old, and she's the bartender, and we're having a nice time. My wife and I are sitting there kibitzing with her, talking. She says, oh, you're from America. Where in New Jersey? Oh, what's the weather like? And, you know, we're making jokes about the weather because it's very rainy over there in Scotland, a lot. We got lucky. We had nicer weather, but this girl is saying, oh, it rains all the time. And, you know, we said, oh, New Jersey rains all the time, too. It's, you know, we have 2 months of nice weather, and then we wait 10 months for that 2 months to come back again. And the girl, she seemed, and I'm going to say she seemed intelligent enough. She was nice. She was very articulate. And then she looks at us and she goes, "So, what do you think of that Trump guy over there?" And my wife and I looked at each other, and just by the tone of her voice and her age, you know, she was a younger person. Our experience over there is that many of the young people they're clinging to their socialism over there because it provides them with things that they don't think they can get on their own. That's really the bottom line. But we looked at her and we said, "Well, actually, we like Donald Trump." She goes, "You like him? He's a lecher. He grabs women by their private parts. He curses. He does all these horrible things." And I said, "Well, where are you hearing that?" She goes, "We hear it on the news all the time. Everybody knows what he's like." I said, "Well, I think you're wrong. People have reported that he's done some things, but, you know," she goes, "Well, what about that tape? What about that tape where it says he's going to," and this was pretty funny, and I guess they'll bleep me out if I can't say this. She goes, "He just walks up to women and he goes over and he says, 'You know what? I'll just tickle the pearl if I feel like it.'" And I said, do you realize in the context that tape was made, that he was talking to another man and he was making stupid man talk? Because, you know, men talk about stupid things and say stupid things sometimes. And that was stupid man talk, kind of bragging to each other about, you know, their conquesty kind of things." She goes, "Oh, no. You know he did it. He said he did it. I said, "Well, you didn't really listen to the tape. On the tape, he said you could do it if you were famous and rich. Women would let you do it." Well, she's like, "Well, I don't know. I think he does it, and I think he's horrible." And I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. Do you know any men in power that have not sometimes taken advantage of their position? We hear about it all the time. Look at Bill Clinton. How much advantage did he take of his position, right? He had many affairs. He had the intern in the White House. And, you know, many men of power will use that power for sexual favors. That's just true, okay? Whether they are always successful or not, they often will try to use their power for sexual. That's a human drive, all right? So somebody with a lot of power has a lot of opportunity, so therefore they act out on it probably more than the regular person. That and the reality that guys say stupid things to each other. You know, they braggadociously make things up sometimes. "Oh, you know, I've been with 52 women, and oh, I loved it." And it's nonsense. I'm not saying that it's that's the best way to talk, because obviously it's not. But the reality is, it's just talk. And we spent 10 or 15 minutes going round and round with this girl till she finally admitted that, well, yeah, guys do say some stupid things and girls say some stupid things. Because I asked her, "You and your girlfriend, you don't ever talk about somebody's boyfriend or some exploits one of your girlfriends had." "Well, yeah, I guess we do. Oh, so you're disgusting. You're horrible. You're a retrobate." And she says, "Well, I'm not the president of a country." And I said, "So because you and your girlfriends made some girlfriend-to-girlfriend sex talk about somebody's experience, you shouldn't be allowed to be in power and be elected to a position and do something for your government?" And she was dumbfounded. She didn't know what to say. She's like, "Well, I don't think it's the same thing." I said, "We just got done this discussion. It's exactly the same thing. People say and do something stupid in private, and it gets out there. How many things have all of us said in private that if it ever got out, we would all look stupid, dumb, or whatever? Everybody says stupid things." And she couldn't get over, because there was this news report that Trump said he could do this, that was the reason he was a retrograde. And she couldn't point to anything else. Just that. And that made her disgusted that he was no good. But then she finally had to admit that probably a lot of the leaders of her country have done the same things. You know, they have scandals over there too. Matter of fact, when it comes to law enforcement, the head of the police, the investigation division for Scotland, the Scottish police, not Scotland Yard, the Scottish police, was suspended because he had a police department car. He was parked at a train station somewhere, and somebody reported several persons in a state of undress in a vehicle. And when the local police went and investigated it, it was the chief of police over there, with a woman who was not his wife. So they suspended him immediately for two reasons. One, because he was with a woman who wasn't his wife in a state of undress in a car. And number two, he was in a police car when he did it. Now you think about that over here. You know, the police car would get you in trouble if you were using a police car when you weren't supposed to. But people cheating on their spouses over here in America, why that's perfectly acceptable, which is kind of weird. That distinction, the whole trip was about distinctions of America and other places. But this girl was dumbfounded, like I said. She didn't know what to say once she kind of admitted that her and her girlfriend say stupid things too, and that probably some of the leaders in her country have done and said stupid things too. And then she kind of walked away. She got to the end of the bar, and she turns around, and she looks at my wife and I, and she goes, "Well, don't tell me you're not for national health care, because if you don't tell me you want national health care, then I can't even talk to you anymore." And we looked at her, and we said, "National health care? You mean like where they tell you how old you should be if you get a knee replacement or what you can do?" She goes, "I'm done. I can't even talk about this." And she went in the back room. Now, thank goodness we weren't ordering any food, because I would have been nervous at that point what she was doing to the food. But she went in the back room, and then she came out a couple minutes later. She left the bar unattended completely, and she came out, and she says, "Listen, I'm really sorry. That got me really upset to think that, you know, people wouldn't want national health care for everyone. So you let people die in the streets in America. You let children go without health care so they get diseases. We hear about all the diseases the children have now because only the rich have health care in America. And what am I supposed to do? Just be happy about that?" Now it was my turn to sit dumbfounded and stare at her. I said, "Do you really believe that? You really believe that in America we do that?" I said, "First of all the diseases that are coming back are ones that we wiped out years ago, and they're coming back for other reasons than us not giving health care to our children." I said, "That's the first thing. Number two, you walk into a hospital in America with any kind of a problem, and they'll take care of you." And she says, "What do you mean? They send you away?" No, they don't. When you walk in and you have a problem, they have to help you, and then they bill you. She goes, "And who pays it?" I said, "Well, if the person doesn't have the money, why do you think I pay $900 for an aspirin when I go to the hospital to pay everyone else's bills?" So I thought there was a couple of minutes there where she was triggered, no doubt about it. She was like a lot of these young people we see today. She was triggered. She had to run in the back room to calm herself down because of an opinion that was different than hers. That was very much similar to some of the young people here in America. But when she finally came out and said, "Well, you know, I'm going to believe you because you seem like you're nice people, that you wouldn't let that happen to others, but socialism is really the better way to go, and everything that you're doing over there is really just about money." I said, "And that money brought us here to buy money at your bar, to buy drinks and food at your bar, didn't it?" She says, "Well, I guess you're right. So I guess it has some good purposes." And she walked away. This was a trip of stark differences, but it made me realize when I had to explain to people about America and set them straight on the truths about who we are, I was very, very proud of our country. It really is a forward-thinking place of compassion and love. And man, we don't stop. There's nothing that can stop America if we move forward. So I'm very proud of our country, and I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I got to share it with you. I'll see you next week here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.